Live from the Next Title Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. You're listening to Majority Thursday on 670 KBOI. We talk to Republicans about the latest news in the Idaho legislature. Now here are Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI.
Thank you. Good morning. It's a Majority Thursday in the Next Title Studio this morning. We have Senator Lori Den Hartog from District 22. And John Vanderwater, also from District 22, the Majority Caucus Chair. It's kind of a family affair.
Good morning, daughter.
Yeah. Good morning. Happy to be here.
Let's start off. We got chewed out for not mentioning this last week. How do you feel about Representative Heather Scott getting her committee assignments back? How do you feel about that whole thing?
I don't know who chewed you out, but I wouldn't have been the one. But I think it was time to move on. She has apologized, and we have accepted her apology. And so I think it's time to move on and start getting to focusing on the business at hand and what needs to be done before we can go home by March 24th.
March 24th.
That's the target date that the speaker has set, and so that's the target date I'm trying to stick to. I didn't tell him I have a flight out of the 25th yet, but, you know.
Are there, now this is kind of a, I guess, backstage kind of thing, but I would assume, like here, for instance, there are plenty of things that we don't say in public, but we just kind of, you know, say to each other once in a while. Isn't that fairly common in the House and the Senate, just, you know, a little bit of talking and grousing going on once in a while?
There is, and there's a lot of times I say stuff like that yeah. I hope people don't repeat or hope people don't, or can be interpreted differently. Sometimes mm-hmm. you make off-the-cuff remarks. This comment was repeated several times in different places, and so that's why I think it reached a higher level that needed to be dealt with.
So it was actually emphasized and not just whispered.
Yeah.
Well, and I think the implication of the comment is what caused the concern. Yeah. I don't think it was necessarily the comment itself, but it was what it implied.
Right.
And giving folks an opportunity to say, no, that's not true. Those things aren't happening.
Because it was basically against all House members, everybody in the legislature. And so I think it needed to be dealt with.
School districts and local control. Let's talk a little bit about that. Where does that stand? I know you're working with education. Where does that stand right now? How do you feel about local control? Is it hard to grasp how much local control?
You know,
how much state control?
We've had a major, I feel like the pendulum is starting to swing back. We've been on one side with the original passage and then repeal of the Luna laws. I feel like we're kind of working our way back towards the middle. As the budget currently stands, school districts have a huge number of line items from the state. A lot of those line items come with specific plans that they're either required to post to their website or required to submit back to the Department of Education or the state board. And we're trying to find a balance between the work that we're requesting our local school districts to do and the accountability measures that we want to see back as a state. What I've seen in some of the plans and what some of our recent discussions have been on the Senate Education Committee is what is the real purpose of the plans that we're requesting? You know, in my opinion, I don't necessarily care how many computers a school is using. I care how well their students are doing. And so I would like to see our focus on, if we want to see plans back from local districts, that we're focusing on outcomes and letting them figure out the details. And I think we're starting to see that shift again. And I think that will continue. It requires trust on both ends. And I think we're all working to improve those relationships.
You think local control kind of gets rid of the attitude that every district is exactly the same and that they're, you know, one size fits all?
Absolutely. And we don't want our local districts to look the same. We have such diversity across the state in the size of districts, the students that they serve. We see great diversity in the offerings, not only within our traditional public schools, but within our public charter schools. And I think we have a lot of opportunities for kids now. And again, local districts are controlled by locally elected school board members, and they are accountable to the people that elect them. And I think sometimes at the state level, we forget that there are local elected officials that are answering for how they're expending their dollars.
The first tax cut proposals of the year passed through committee on Tuesday. And, for instance, House Bill 67 would exempt the first $750 of income from taxation. It would lower the top income and corporate rates from 7.4 to 7.2. First of all, thank you, but is this something we can afford?
Yes, I believe that we have enough of the money in the budget and enough money coming in. We're looking at about $130 million of surplus from this last year of money that we collected that we didn't have spent, and the economy seems to be on the right track. We got to be a little careful that this is not another bubble like we had back in 2008 and 2009 and that it's a crash, but I think it's within the realm of possibilities that we can reach it in the budget of the initial tax base that we have. And, you know, we have a higher tax base than any of the states around us on income tax, and we have probably the lowest bracket because you got to reach $7,500, and you are now in the high income tax bracket in the state. And so a lot of states may have a lower bracket, but you got to earn quite a bit more money before you hit the high bracket. So Everybody's pretty much in the high bracket. And
whenever you hear the criticism, you always hear stuff like, "Wow, this only helps the 1%," but it's a slightly larger percentage in Idaho, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the percentage of people that make over $7,500 a year is probably pretty high in the state.
And I would hope it's more than
1%. Yes.
We are talking with Senator Lori Den Hartog from District 22, along with Representative John Vanderwoude.
This is Majority Thursday on Idaho Talks Live. Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider, along with Senator Lori Den Hartog from District 22, and Majority Caucus Chair in the House, Representative John Vanderwoude. Let's talk a little bit more about money, talking about the proposed tax cuts. What do you see happening in the next couple of weeks when it comes to the budget and taxes and things like that? Anything big?
You know, I hope to see some additional proposals and options come out of the House. I know there's been a lot of conversation over the years about changing how we do the grocery tax credit and the potential for removing the sales tax on groceries. I think there's a lot of support in both the House and the Senate for that, and particularly for those who represent our border communities. They are losing a lot of revenue by folks shopping in states that don't have a sales tax, either at all or on their groceries. So I hope we see something like that, and I think there's still some work afoot in that realm. The other thing that I would like to see on tax policy, and there's been a number of us over the years that have talked about this, is it seems like the years when we have tax cut proposals, they happen more in a vacuum, that they're not part of a larger plan, that we don't have, you know, a five-year plan to either change our tax structure or, you know, review exemptions or do these kinds of things so that we can lower our rates. Because, you know, as Representative Vanderwoude said earlier, you know, if you're over $7,000, you're paying the top income tax rate here in Idaho. So I would like us to be a little more proactive in how we address tax policy and not just have a proposal and see what sticks from year to year.
Representative, Idaho spending about $650,000 to feed elk, deer, and antelope this year. It's been a horrible winter. And some people are for this, some people are against this. What is your feeling?
We did another supplemental to help them fund that. I think most of the people are in favor of the feeding of the deer and the elk, and the disputes we've had have been on how it's administered, what dollars actually go in there, who goes out to feed, and, you know, they're looking at now, well, if we have winters like we just had this, or we're having this year, that maybe they need more employees or volunteers to go out. And so I think most people are in favor of, but they'd like to see them fed before they get down into the neighborhoods or down into somebody's basement, you know. So, you know, it's trying to keep them more out of the and more out into the mountains instead of down here in the valley. So I don't think there's a lot of objection to feeding them. It's just a matter of how it's managed.
Yeah, there's no south-facing hillsides to eat this year.
No, everything's covered with snow, and that's why they've come down, and it's covered with snow down here too. So there really isn't much. So they, you know, I think it's important to keep our our animals there healthy and safe, but it's a management as far as for fish and game to deal with.
There's a new proposal to ban Islamic law in state courts, in particular Sharia law. First of all, is this a problem anywhere in Idaho?
No, at this point it is not. You know, talking to the representative who brought the proposal, he thinks, you know, it's putting up a smoke detector before there's a fire instead of putting up a smoke detector after the fire. Whether that has any validity to it or not, I think there are some cases in the United States where we have seen judges kind of go to the Sharia law instead of to the U.S. Constitution or using Sharia law to justify some decisions.
Yeah. As in, let us keep it in the family. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. And so I think that it's worth a discussion. Whether that bill goes anywhere or not, I don't know. But I think it's worth a discussion because you know, when we've looked even this year at Supreme Court justice, we want justices that interpret the Constitution and not start using international law to determine what we have to do here in the United States. And so in that aspect, I think it's worth a discussion.
And talk about sanctuary cities and withholding state funds from sanctuary cities. This doesn't seem to be, to me anyway, to be a problem. Is this the same thing trying to head stuff off before it starts?
Well, part of it is and part of it isn't. I think we all remember that unless we changed our speed limit down to 55, the federal government wasn't going to give us highway dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So the federal government has been used this policy to bully states. We saw it last year in the Real ID where, hey, unless you pass this, then we're not going to let your driver's license get on the plane. And so, you know, what laws do we say the federal government is allowed to enforce or put money behind and say, hey, if you don't agree with this, that's fine, but then you don't get the money. So it's nothing. It's not a new tactic. It's something we've seen all along. Yeah, I think you see it in school funding, the same thing. Either you do this or you don't get the dollars. And so some people might say it's bullying, but that's been pretty much the policy from the federal government level.
And I guess the mayor of Boise said that we're not a sanctuary city, but we're a welcoming city, which I guess was the policy of the Chamber of Commerce anyway. So that's good.
Yeah, and I think the idea being that if people are coming in and have gained refugee status, you know, we're looking to improve the vetting policies and process. And of course, if they're a refugee, they're coming from war-torn countries and countries where it's difficult to find information. And that doesn't mean we can't you know, welcome them into our community, but we're all concerned about our safety.
Senator, Representative, thank you. It's been great.
Thank you.
We are out of time. KBOI News Time, 8:56.
If you're talking about it,
they're getting nervous, and they should be nervous.
You know, I kind of disagree with what you're saying.
We're talking about it.
You know, I think it's kind of great that you guys have that duality.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho, 670 KBOI.
All right, good morning. We are back. Thanks to the Republicans for being in today. Democrats have their turn at bat tomorrow. It's 9:06, Super Bowl Sunday coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Story out of Odessa, Texas.
Yeah, out in West Texas.
Yep. Staff at a medical center hospital, cath lab, are looking to stay busy this Super Bowl Sunday. This is weird. A study by the American Journal of Cardiology found that Super Bowl Sunday may trigger not just heart attacks, but fatal heart attacks. Now, we've all been at football games, right? Where
sure.
We've seen the guy, you know, down the row keel over and they take him off. And you always wonder what happened, but you never really find out.
I never assume heart attack first.
No. Yeah, exactly. My dad's best friend when I was 16, I was watching a football game back in the 80s. It was Joe Montana to Dwight Clark in the final moments of the game. The Cowboys lost. My dad's best friend died. right there in his chair at home watching the football game.
And that was just the NFC Championship.
Yeah, that wasn't even the Super Bowl. How could something entertaining on your TV be fatal? Now, you get into football games, right?
You bet.
So do I.
I much prefer to watch if I feel like I've got something at stake. I mean, technically, I never do, but, you know, I root for one team or the other.
Do you get vocal?
I can. I got vocal at the Redskins a few times this year, and at the Broncos, I believe, on three different occasions.
Demonstrative?
I wouldn't say demonstrative. My wife might, but I wouldn't. She's been known to say a few words to Kirk Cousins.
Yeah. And he heard him, too. How could something entertaining be fatal? Although it may be a victory for the winning team, it's not always the case for the opposing side. So as you get further into this study, it appears that the fatal heart attacks happen mainly to the losers.
So if your team, if you're counting on a win and your team is... let's say the Super Bowl, the Patriots against Seattle. Seattle just assumed we were going to run that ball in there and we're going to win and it's going to be great. And then they passed it and it was intercepted.
Yeah.
And they lost.
Yeah.
Now, would you think that Seahawks fans would have keeled over at that point?
I'm sure some did.
Wow.
And this study would absolutely support that. Pretty incredible stuff. If you feel really bad and you're not sure why, but you feel like something bad is about to happen, that's a symptom we want you to pay attention to.
Okay, but see, that's what I always feel that way during a football game. I don't think by nature I'm optimistic, simply because when you're pessimistic, you tend to be disappointed less.
Yeah.
You know? You're not thinking, oh, this is going to be great, and then it wasn't great. If you're pessimistic, it wasn't great. Hey, I was right.
Any kind of high-stress event can increase the pressure in your arteries and predispose you to having a heart attack. So if you start to have chronic sweating or fatigue, don't watch the rest of the game. Dial 911.
For God's sake, don't watch the news.
Yeah, and if you feel a heart attack coming, avoid driving to the hospital yourself.
Yeah, that's
60 to 70 patients.
One of the reasons, people always think, well, I could get there faster than it'll take for the ambulance to get here. The ambulance has medical equipment in it that could keep you alive. Your car probably doesn't.
How about me, a mile away from the hospital?
Exactly.
I can beat the ambulance.
You could just roll down the hill.
Yeah, I can. Yeah. You don't bet.
They're not booing. They're saying St. Luke's.
You don't bet on football, do you?
No. I'm not really good at betting.
I did a couple of times. That just, what it does is like highlights the anxiety.
Oh, yeah.
That you feel, and it moves it to a whole other level. Now, you've been in Vegas during football games, right?
Yes, I have.
Watch those idiots.
Reno and Jackpot.
Watch those idiots in the sport books.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Going crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, some of them, you can see it in their eyes that they've bet more than they should.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah. In fact, most of them.
I had a friend say to me once, you mean you've never written a check knowing you don't have the money in the bank because you know you're going to win? I'm going.
I have to admit, I have never done that.
Me neither.
And that's one of the reasons.
That would put the extra pressure on you right there.
Well, exactly. Well, that would if you thrive on pressure, that would be just as fun as could be.
Whew.
But apparently enough people die of heart attacks from pressure that it wouldn't be.
Yeah. So don't drive yourself to the hospital.
No.
Because 70 to 80% of people do.
I get these tips all the times about, people send me tips about what to do in case of a heart attack. Go figure. But I do get these from a lot of different people. And one of the things they always say is that if you feel like you're having a heart attack, force yourself to cough. I don't know what it does, but I'm guessing maybe it restarts your heart or something. I don't know.
Who gave you that advice?
It shows up in Facebook every now and then. I'm keeping it in mind just in case I need to try it.
Well,
let's put it this way.
What are you going to lose?
Yeah, exactly. If I cough and I still die, well, yeah, there you go.
You'll take that secret to the grave,
sure,
right?
I guess so. Well, it's not a secret now. I just, you know, explained it to everybody, but
so
force yourself to cough.
Yeah. I used to get really jacked up on, I guess.
Adrenaline?
Watching a game. Well, yeah. Anybody who's ever heard me do play-by-play.
Well, yeah. And you did. Yeah. When you were doing play-by-play, and I told you this one time.
I got into the game.
One of the bowl games, I purposely went back and forth listening to somebody else call the exact same game as you, and I eventually just settled on you because when you were calling it, it was exciting, and the other guy was just going, well, they've completed another pass for 7 yards. And I thought, wow, how boring is this? You know, and it wasn't a boring game, but he made it sound boring.
Yeah.
And you never did that.
Yeah. So, anyway.
And it wasn't Beeler. I'm not talking Beeler. I'm talking somebody else.
So, I always liked the adrenaline rush of doing a game and doing play-by-play and being a sports fan generally and watching.
Sure. Yeah.
You get to experience the highs and lows, the ups and downs, and you ain't going to lose your job.
I like the highs and the
like
ups.
Like the coaches.
Right.
I mean,
well, good point.
If you have a 1-10 season, you're back next year. The coaches, maybe not. But
think how they feel.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, seriously, college kids running around with their paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
Yay!
Yeah. What do you mean? Don't call a fair catch inside the one. What?
Whatever happened to that rule? But they used to tell returners to stand on the ten, and if it's going over your head, let it go.
Yep.
And I've seen
how many times I've this seen, year I've seen guys, did you see the guy catch it on the two
or on the, or eight, the eight or the seven, and I just, is that rule gone now?
Apparently,
well, I guess.
It's actually not, but, you know, they're 18-year-old kids.
Well, true.
But so I guess my advice here is just a lot of people don't like the Patriots. So if the Patriots start to pull away, just remember this. In a month, it'll be 55 degrees. The sun will be out, and you can go play golf. Okay?
And also, you know, baseball season is coming.
Yeah. Exactly.
As my mom used to say, unlax.
Yeah, unlax. Good advice. But heart attacks.
It's a lot like relax, but it's for specific situations.
And I guess people who have people whose team starts to lose, keep an eye on them because they could be having a heart attack.
They might not just be being quiet.
Yeah, I don't think this year is a heart attack game for me because...
Yeah, we're not...
I like Atlanta.
But we're not Patriots. We're not Falcon fans, you know.
I like Atlanta because they're not the Patriots. They could be anybody.
Yeah.
But I think they're pretty good. But I just don't like the Patriots.
Yeah, this is going to be one of those... they think it'll be a classic quarterback battle.
Yeah.
Yeah, because two really good quarterbacks.
Yep. I always remember Matt Ryan.
One looking for his first Super Bowl win, one who's won about, 20 of them now?
Yeah. I always remember Matt Ryan here in Boise in the bowl game.
Mm-hmm. For BC.
For BC, Boston College, and they had a 6-point lead on Boise State, and Zabransky just started hitting. And I remember saying, game on, after we got to within six, got the ball back, drove all the way down the field.
Yeah, I remember that.
And Z throws an interception. And I was crushed, and then I talked to the coaches afterwards. Wasn't his fault. The receiver turned the wrong way.
Oh, wow.
Wasn't his fault. He got ripped for that thing unmercifully until he salvaged it all in the Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah, he had a pretty good last game.
Yeah. KBOI News Time, 9:17.
Is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 10, listen to Rush on 670 KBOI.
KBOI News Time, 9:22, Idaho Talks Live. We'd like to hear from you this morning, 336-3700, if you've got a comment, 336-3700. The president said this morning that his administration has put Iran on notice, echoing comments from his top national security advisor that the United States will act against Iran unless it stops testing ballistic missiles and supporting the Houthi rebels in Yemen. I've heard it said both ways. I'm not sure. Trump and his national security advisor, Michael Flynn, did not elaborate on what retaliatory actions the U.S. could pursue. Trump tweeted, Iran has formally been put on notice for firing a ballistic missile. should have been thankful for the terrible deal the U.S. made with them. He added in another tweet, Iran was on its last legs and ready to collapse until the U.S. came along and gave it a lifeline in the form of the Iran deal, $150 billion. And of course, he said all along that the Iran deal was terrible for the U.S. As part of a nuclear deal struck during the Obama administration, Iran received access to an estimated $100 billion of its own money that had previously been frozen in foreign bank accounts. And the U.S. did not actually give Iran $150 billion. Flynn on Wednesday forcefully denounced Iran's behavior in his first public remarks since the president took office. He accused Iran of threatening U.S. allies and spreading instability throughout the Middle East, as if they need that, while faulting the Obama administration for doing too little to stop the Islamic Republic. As of today, we are officially putting Iran on notice, Flynn said from the White House podium. On notice for what? Flynn didn't say. Senior Trump administration officials said they were actively considering a range of options, including economic measures and increased support for Iran's regional adversaries. The officials who briefed reporters on condition of anonymity declined repeatedly to say whether military action is being considered. But what else does on notice mean, I wonder?
It means military action.
That's what it seems, yeah.
This is what people are afraid of Trump, because they're afraid he's going to get us in over our head.
Into a war, or into any war, but into a war too large for us to ever get out.
Yeah.
Not that we haven't already done that. But the warning was an early manifestation of the president's promise of a tougher American approach to Iran. Yet administration officials emphasized that their allegations were unrelated to Iran's obligations under the Iran nuclear deal that President Obama and world leaders negotiated. Though Flynn noted that the president has criticized that deal, officials declined to say whether Donald Trump planned to follow through on his campaign pledge to renegotiate it.
All right, so we got some business to do here in the next 30 seconds. KBOI rewards code RELAX, R-E-L-A-X. Go to 670KBOI.com, enter RELAX, earn today's 5,000 rewards points. And the big game coming up Sunday, KBOI wants you to see it on the big screen. We have an exclusive big game viewing party at the Village Cinema in Meridian.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to give away two packs. Callers number 6 and 7 right now at 336-3711. Got to be 21 because they're going to be serving beer. It's brought to you by Greene's Appliance Heating and Cooling. Call now. Callers 6 and 7, each one a two-pack to the big game party tickets.
Remember, you are listening to Idaho Talks Live on 670 KBOI.
We are back, Paul, Jay, and Chris, on a Thursday morning. Another beautiful Thursday morning.
Oh,
28 degrees.
In regard to the thing you were talking about earlier about people having heart attacks during exciting sporting events and stuff like that, William of Garden City wanted to know, using this study regarding heart attacks, how many heart attacks can be attributed to Trump's presidential win? Well,
tongue-in-cheek there, William.
It's a little bit like sports because it's, one side against the other, and it's a little bit like an upset because the side that didn't win, certainly right up till about 8 o'clock, thought they were going to.
Here's the deal with me, didn't you think Trump had a chance? I thought he had a chance.
Well, yeah.
I figured the people
taking polls knew how to do that or were a little better than it turned out they were.
Because
they had Hillary Clinton ahead by 5%
in
some places where she, didn't even come close to winning.
And I could not believe what I was hearing when I was watching TV that everybody was so
stunned. Yeah. Well, it's kind of like,
really?
And it's the same people.
Our audience is conservative.
It's the same newscasters that this week, we're on, day 13 of the presidency.
Yeah.
Or day 14, I guess.
Yeah.
And there are some newscasters that are still just aghast at everything that the president is doing,
all
the things he promised he would do, those are the things that he's doing. And they act like, I never thought once he got into office he'd actually do these things. Really? Seriously, where did you come up with that?
Do you ever remember a president hit the ground running like this?
No, not much.
No, never.
Like I said, it's like I would still be trying to figure out how to use the phone system or something.
Yeah. Now, which one is the blue room?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, is this the east room or the west room?
Yeah.
Where's the restroom?
Quickly here, Boise Rabble Rouser says, as President Trump and his group of warmongers start the road to war with Iran, keep in mind, one, a ballistic missile with a 600-mile range is not a nuclear weapon and was not prohibited by the nuclear agreement. Two, the nuclear agreement was agreed to by the U.S. and five other nations. Three, according to the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, Iran has complied with all nuclear agreement provisions, including destroying centrifuges and closing a research facility. Four, war with Iran would eventually expand to Russia to produce World War III. Let's keep President Trump under control before he ruins the world. Iran is an ally of Russia, but officially right now, so are we.
Yeah. He's a little scary, simply because he's kind of a loose cannon, shoots from the hip.
Yeah, shoot from the hip. And I guess people don't want it to be literal. Don't literally shoot. But, for instance, yesterday he was talking to various world leaders on the phone, something that world leaders do. And he talked to the Prime Minister of Australia, obviously one of our allies, and as far as everyone is concerned, basically insulted him.
Yeah.
And that may not be the most diplomatic thing in the world to do, but he's not really about diplomacy. He's about, getting things done, and if you have to step on people's toes, go ahead. But, I don't know.
Did you hear what he said at the prayer breakfast?
But do you think there should be a limit to that? Where somebody says, it might have been a little too far. What did he say at the prayer breakfast?
Pray for Arnold Schwarzenegger. Speaking at the National Prayer Breakfast,
really?
Unlike any before it, President Trump this morning said the nation has to be tougher in dealing with other countries, pledged to make it easier for religious groups to engage in politics, mm-hmm. and asked the crowd to pray for his successor as host of The Apprentice. Now, this is typical Trump.
You think that was tongue-in-cheek?
No, listen to this.
Uh-oh.
This is typical Trump. The ratings went down the tube since Arnold Schwarzenegger took over as host of his former program.
Mm-hmm.
Trump said it's been a total disaster, and I just want to pray for Arnold. If we can, pray for those ratings, okay?
That's payback for last week.
Yeah.
When Schwarzenegger said that the immigrant ban was a huge mistake.
Yeah, well, being an immigrant himself. Schwarzenegger responded by Twitter, offering to switch jobs with Trump so that people can finally sleep comfortably again. If he wants
to go back and host the Celebrity Apprentice, then Arnold Schwarzenegger would be happy to step in as president.
Yeah,
I see.
Exactly. The former California governor headlined his tweet, National Prayer Breakfast, ?
Oh, that's interesting.
In his remarks at the breakfast, Trump constantly referenced himself, talking at one point about how people often greet him with five words that warm his heart. Those words, I am praying for you.
Hmm.
He also said, so many faith leaders have been very, very important people to me.
Do you remember what, a few years ago, you asked me this? You said, whatever happened to the days when something would happen that involved, nations or a war or something like that, and you had, for instance, the Catholic would have been Bishop Fulton J. Sheen.
Right.
Or Billy Graham.
Right.
For the, fundamentalist Christians.
Sure.
Or all these different people, and you could count on them to make a comment.
Mm-hmm.
And reporters would actually go to them and say, what do you think? Can you speak on behalf of your group? And sometimes they'd say, this is my opinion. And sometimes they'd actually be speaking on behalf of their religion.
Or on their Sunday shows, which they all had.
And you asked this several times. You said, what happened to the days when those guys would actually be kind of a political force? They'd say, okay, we've got a lot of this. And I remember the Moral Majority and all these different people, and they still are a political force to a certain extent. But you don't hear as many. And my guess is it's not the actual religious leaders themselves. My guess is the reporters aren't showing up to talk to them anymore.
I can even remember, you know, locally, mm-hmm. when people used to, you know, talk to the bishop, you know, and in the Catholic Church, you know, mm-hmm. and then, like, you know, in Boston or wherever or here or, you know, and now they...
Well, because they'd want to know what is the church's official position on things.
Do you think it's because of the scandals in the Catholic Church that they've kind of withdrawn from public comment on anything?
No, I still go back to what I said. I think that the reason you don't get more comments from religious leaders in 2017 and, you know, the past few years mm-hmm. is that the reporters aren't going to them anymore. They simply don't want to know what they think. They figure, okay, my guess is you're going to be against abortion, you're going to be against this, you're going to be against that, and we've already heard it, and we don't care. Whereas, you know, this would have been, you know, even if you didn't agree with their opinion way back when, they would have been given respect for giving their opinion.
Yeah, and more people probably
now,
did agree with
I'm not
opinion.
Saying that there should be more religion in government, because clearly they're supposed to be separate.
Right.
But as we have pointed out, anybody who professes to be a member of any religion or professes to be a religious person or honestly believes in something or other, and yeah, there's about 30% of the country that doesn't believe anything, but anybody who does, that cannot help but affect your life in every way possible. I mean, you can compartmentalize it. Like, remember John Kerry said that there wouldn't be any decision that he would ever make that would have anything to do with the fact that he was Catholic. And I said, well, I don't believe that, but, you know, at least he's compartmentalizing it. He says, okay, the government's over here and the Catholic Church is over here.
But your moral upbringing
will help you reach decisions. It has a great deal to do with, you know, whether or not you can be objective. And as I've said, objectivity is something people strive for, but I still think it's impossible. But people want to know, you know, in what way you are subjective, yeah. and from what angle.
Yeah, and we got to take a break. But Trump, again, at this prayer breakfast, referenced foreign policy, telling members of the prayer breakfast not to worry about reports of his tough phone calls with world leaders.
Yeah.
We're being taken advantage of by nearly every nation in the world. Virtually, Trump said.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen anymore.
This is like, and I don't mean to say like the United States is a parent and these other countries are children, but this is a little bit like when a parent says, oh, I just want to be my child's best friend, and then a few years later you see the kid walking all over the parent. He doesn't want that to happen.
Who's in charge here?
Right.
That's my favorite line from a movie. KBOI News Time, 9:46.
Did you see where...
Don't bother me. I'm praying for Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Amen. Okay.
I wondered what you were doing down
yeah.
there. Anyway, Joe Namath, who every year at this time gets interviewed by a lot of people during Super Bowl week because, you know, he's the star of Super Bowl III 48 years ago.
Wow.
He was talking about... Somebody was asking him about concussions. And he said that he spent some time in one of those hyperbaric oxygen chambers, as people used to say that, you know, Michael Jackson would sleep in. I don't think he ever really did, but they had a picture of him lying down in one time, and then they, you know, started saying that he was sleeping in them. But he said that it helped him, and that he thinks that sort of thing could help, you know, the players that are currently getting concussions and people who are wounded in wars and you know, come home with maybe a brain injury or something like that. He said that the hyperbaric oxygen chamber, it works miracles. Now, it apparently did for him, and you never know. Everybody's going to be different. But, you know, it's a possibility that could be something that the NFL starts using soon. In other words, that'll be part of the concussion protocol.
Now, have you seen the, obviously you have because you watch football,
mm-hmm.
the new helmets and the helmets that are different. Linemen wear different helmets than quarterbacks, and quarterbacks wear different helmets than running backs,
mm-hmm.
and they're shaped different. And they're, you know,
I mean, for years they've worn different padding. They've worn they've worn different cut jerseys. Like there's the lineman cut, and then there's the cut that the backs wear. It's different.
But it's noticeable now how big.
Yeah.
And
some of them kind of
strong the helmets you're looking.
Well, some of them they kind of make you look like you've got an alien shape head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like aliens from the movies, not illegal aliens.
Yeah, you gotta be clear on that.
Well, yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah.
Dave of Boise says, "I love the way President Trump is telling it how it is. He's not into the phony baloney nonsense that politicians have been practicing for years. He is bypassing all the formalities and getting right to the point. Yes, people are not used to being spoken to in that fashion, but there is no time to waste. That's another way nothing gets done. So if he has to upset some people for the greater good for us all, then I say power to him. We should all be supporting him, and shame on the ones who don't."
No, you can't say that. If you support him, that's fine. And if I support him, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody doesn't agree with some of his policies, that's also fine. That's what makes this country a democracy. If we all have to fall in line and agree with the head of the country.
Well, that's a dictatorship, and you don't want
bingo,
that.
Bingo, right. Bongo.
Yeah. And you can be very fond of somebody, and you can obey direct orders and
sure.
things and things like that. You know, of your commander in chief, but you don't necessarily have to have blind faith in another human being.
But
you can check up on them as often as you want. In fact, you probably have a responsibility to do so.
And a lot of people now are basically saying, you know, if you don't support all of Trump's stuff, you know.
Well, they said that about Obama. They said
sure,
it about Clinton, George
yeah.
W. Bush, Reagan, everybody.
Yeah.
There are a whole lot of people that say you're either in 100% or you're in zero.
Yeah.
Well, that's not really the way life works, is it?
What is that thing? Lead something or get out of the way?
Lead, follow, or get out of the way.
Yeah.
And as I like to say, or obstruct.
Or obstruct, yeah.
That is a fourth thing.
But I do think some of these protests, riots, they're not protests anymore. They're riots when you start burning stuff down and throwing.
Well, it's
the University of California, Berkeley. Now Breitbart is really kind of an over the edge conservative website.
Okay.
But in this country, everybody gets hurt.
Well,
right?
on Breitbart, you would not accuse them of being leftists. Let's put it that way, ever.
But in this country, everybody gets hurt. So
sure.
The University of California, Berkeley had one of the heads of Breitbart coming in to speak.
Uh-huh.
And there was a protest against this guy, which forced the speech to be canceled.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's Berkeley, though.
Yeah, well,
they don't like anybody that doesn't have the right opinion.
But,
and by that, I mean the correct opinion, not the one on the right.
Yeah, but here's the deal. What do? They burn Berkeley down. They break into places, start fires, steal stuff. Really? What is that helping?
Well, as people would say every time there's a riot of some sort or a protest going on in Berkeley, hey, somebody must have dropped a hat.
Yeah. Well, I know, but it's just so reflexively stupid.
Oh, yeah.
And it's I don't know.
Well, and you know what? If you're marching and listening to speeches and carrying a sign, people have a tendency to pay a lot better attention to your point than if you're throwing bricks through windows.
Yeah, exactly. Strange world we live in. But I want to offer this to you as we leave you on this Thursday morning. Like Donald Trump said this morning, please pray for Arnold Schwarzenegger. We need the ratings. Come on. The Apprentice has fallen off the face of the earth. Come on. Pray for Arnold.
And everybody else. That we do encourage that.